So welcome to everyone and to those that I didn't get to say hi to. So as many of you know, I'm part of the Sunday Sims Meditation Leadership Team. And there's six of us, five local Dharma leaders in Tewari. And every month towards the end of the month, we meet to look at what the next month will be. And as you know, we've been working on the cycle of dependent origination all year. And in June, we met to talk about how we were going to approach Vedana this month of July, both the content and then we sign up for who's going to give a talk and who's going to guide the meditation. And as we went through this back and forth with Tewari, it became clear that it might be a good idea to talk about the neutral tone of Vedana, of the feeling tones. And so I volunteered to do that. And after the meeting, and I started to look at my notes of what we had talked about and the fact that I had volunteered to give the talk on neutral, my response was, yikes, what did I sign up for? As I shared with a friend, I don't know squat about neutral. I don't know much about Vedana either. So I spent the next couple weeks really focusing my practice on feeling tone and on neutral. And the good news is I realized I actually do know a few things. And one other thing that I'd like to share is that Rodney, our founding teacher, did a fabulous series on dependent origination in 2013, and he has two talks on Vedana. Neither one of them really deals with neutral, but they're really good talks. So the couple things I realized that I knew, first is feeling tone is really hard to practice with. When you're on retreat and you're pretty settled and the mind is pretty concentrated, I have found that I can see the pleasant, unpleasant evaluation that comes from the mind before I get all pulled away. But most of the time in daily life and even in daily sits, the time I notice pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral is when I'm already fully ensconced in some story about it. The second thing that I learned was that practicing with the neutral tone, the neither pleasant nor unpleasant, can be a really good access point for practicing with all three of the feeling tones. So I'm hopeful that tonight I will be able to share something that might be useful for your practice as well. So I gave a shorter version of this talk a couple Sundays ago, and for those lovely ones who were there, apologies that you're going to hear the same talk again with, I think, better than what I did. And the reason I wanted to mention that is that after the talk, we broke up into breakout groups like we'll do tonight, and then people came back and shared a lot of comments and questions, and I learned so much about the topic from those comments. So it's a way of just encouraging people, if you feel like you can, participating in the discussion groups and then coming back and sharing with the full group is really helpful to everyone, including those of us who take turns sharing the Dharma. Generally, most of the teaching on Vedana focuses on pleasant and unpleasant, and it makes sense, you know, the pleasant and how it leads to clinging, and the unpleasant and how it leads to pushing away. And of course it makes sense, because the second noble truth of what causes suffering is craving and clinging, and the pursuing and the avoiding are just two sides of the same coin. And Tim talked about that both last week and the week before. There's a teacher in our tradition whose name is Anilayo, and he wrote what is considered the book on the Satipatthana Sutta, which is the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. And in that book, or actually it's the second book, he shared a way of practicing with Vedana, which I have found to be really helpful. He suggests that we think about the feeling tones as a being on a continuum, where extremely pleasant is on one end, then moving to just kind of pleasant, then the middle place of neither pleasant nor unpleasant, then mildly unpleasant, and then extremely unpleasant. And especially when we practice in the body, it can be a very skillful way of knowing what this experience of Vedana, of these feeling tones, is actually like. And it helped me a lot as I went from the yikes of what am I going to talk about to practicing with it for the last couple weeks. And practicing mostly with neutral has really helped me get more access to the other feeling tones in my daily sits, in my daily life. So first, a few kind of introductory remarks about Vedana. All experience is neutral until the mind judges it to be one way or another. In a Sunday morning Dharma talk, Tiwari referred to feeling tones as mental applications to neutral events. So again, all experience is neutral. We know that all experiences arise out of the sense doors. So at any moment we're, you know, experience sounds from the ear sense doors, visual forms from the eyes, odors from the nose, and on, including mind objects from the mind. When they arise, that's all they are. Mental applications to neutral events is what the pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral are. The qualities that we impose on events, experiences, sensations are not inherent in that event, thought, experience, sensation. And in our lives, we are really good at pursuing experiences, going here, going there, seeking, wanting, buying, adding to our list of life experiences. And during these months of COVID, wow, so many of us are craving experiences that would take us out of confinement. Yet when we look at experience and we break it down to its basic elements, there are only a few things happening. Like, where did it happen? What was the actual activity? Was it done alone or with other people? How long did it last? And what were the experiences of the sense doors? I mean, even all of our fantasies of those delightful concerts, dinners out, camping trips, travel, plays, movies, all the things we're craving, to quote a dear friend of mine, they're just experiences. So I'm not trying to take away the charm of experience or paint life as dull and drab. But I think this awareness of looking at experience, looking at whatever has arisen as being essentially neutral, can really help us when we feel the tug of pleasant, unpleasant, or even the tug of neutral. So all experience is basically neutral. The second thing to talk about tonight goes to our poem, of how we need to pay really close attention in order to understand feeling tones and to catch them when they arise. To practice with Vedana is to really fine-tune our attention, our mindfulness. It's like in our poem. Think about bird feathers in Seattle. The ubiquitous pigeon, crow, seagull, sparrow, starling. Can we treat even a pigeon or crow feather floating down from some anonymous rooftop as worthy of our attention? Can we see every moment as worthy of our attention? And then remembering, like in our poem, there are payoffs when we pay attention to even seemingly inconsequential events. The poet says, "If I had not looked up to watch the feather gliding over the roof, I would not have seen the crescent moon hanging at midday." As Tim talked about last week, all feeling tones are conditioned. In fact, for these first 6.5 months of the year, looking at the cycle of dependent origination, everything is about conditionality. ignorance, the mental formations, name and form, how we experience the sense doors. Vedana, feeling tone, is the very first time in this cycle when we start to have some choice. And I'll talk about that in a little bit. But even with Vedana, they're conditioned responses. You know, when this happened a long time ago, I didn't like it. So when it happens again, I still don't like it. Tim shared some really great examples last week. He talked about conditioning in terms of language and brought up chess. For him, he was taught how to play chess by his grandpa. And it was really a positive thing when he thinks about chess. For his daughter, Lily, not so much because she doesn't like the game. I'm a gardener. I admit there are probably a lot of gardeners out there. When a ladybug lands on my arm, it's so pleasant and it's so exciting because all gardeners love ladybugs, right? But if a snail, a slug, a potato bug, a beetle lands on your arm, it's like, yikes, get it out of here. Well, what's happening here? Just a neutral experience, just a bug in the garden that's interacting with a human. So the difference is just conditioning. Think about your relationship to food. You know, if you were like me, my mother hated vegetables. So we never ate any, and I had to do some really serious reconditioning in order to grow a love for vegetables. But if you grew up and hated beets, you know, do you even give beets a chance when you are served them now? Not only are specific feeling tones conditioned in certain circumstances like bugs, food, or language, but we might also have conditioned responses to the very nature of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. When we look at neutral, think about your childhood house. Was it quiet? Was the TV always on? Or was it the house always filled with entertainment and distractions? Were you encouraged as a child to just sit, do nothing, read, be quiet? Or was there a lot of prodding to be productive? Was quiet time valued? Around pleasant and unpleasant, brain scientists, you know, have been talking about something they call negative bias that exists in us, a tendency to go towards the negative. So one way that we might see that there may be a conditioned bias towards the negative that comes into our experience from the mind. And just like all experiences and sensations are changing all the time, the truth of Anicca, so are the feeling tones. Feelings are like winds that come from different directions, and Anilayo says. And just like the winds, they change really frequently. The mind's response to an event or sensation does change quickly and often, and also often. So, and sometimes we can even have the same feeling, have the same experience, but have a totally different feeling tone response to it. In one of her books, Sylvia Boorstein describes this great example where there's a new couple. In this case, it happens to be a man and a woman, and they go out to dinner, and the guy orders soup, and he proceeds to eat it with a fork. And the woman thinks, oh, isn't that just the loveliest thing you ever saw? It's so adorable that he's eating this with a fork. And then a few months go by and they go out to dinner again and he orders soup and he eats it with a fork. And she is just appalled. I mean, whoever heard of eating soup with a fork? Didn't he ever learn anything? You know, you're supposed to eat it with a spoon. And we also know, in terms of pleasant and unpleasant and neutral changing, that too much of even a pleasant thing can become unpleasant. You know, the first ice cream cone is wonderful. The third, not so much. Staying in bed can feel so great until you're told that you have to stay in bed. And the truth of this changeability of feeling tone really underscores the importance of paying attention to subtle, even mundane, ordinary sensations and experiences, because the pleasant might come up and the next thing you know, it's unpleasant. Or as someone said a couple weeks ago in the Q&A part of Sunday, that whenever she feels like she's in that neutral place, the mind really calls it pleasant. So she doesn't even give herself an opportunity to really experience what the neutral is. So paying attention to the neutral, perhaps the uneventful, that place in the middle of the continuum, which is neither pleasant nor unpleasant, I have found can be a really effective way of practicing with all the feeling tones. And certainly, you know, for those of you who've had long practices, I'm sure you have your own ways of practicing with pleasant and unpleasant and neutral. And if it's working for you, keep doing it. There may be some out here who are having some difficulty like I have. So I'm going to share some of the reasons why I think practicing with neutral can be really helpful. First of all, I think that neutral can be less charged than pleasant or unpleasant. Sometimes the pull of pleasant and wanting and craving, or the pull of unpleasant and pushing away, can be really, really strong. Often I have found that when neutral is up, there's not really too much restlessness in the body. And accompanying that, there's not really very much restlessness in the mind either. Instead, there's kind of a place of okay relaxation, that place of non-restlessness. I don't know about you all, but for me, restlessness is my most favorite hindrance. It's very familiar. And so for me to experience what does non-restlessness feel like has been really helpful. Tim spoke last week about subtlety, and yet he also talked about how pleasant and unpleasant can be really big pulls where you're pushed down that chute. He was talking about the analogy of the game of chutes and ladders. Well, neutral, in my experience, can be a gentler tug, a little bit more subtle. While all feeling tones are conditioned, I have found that I can transform some of the neutral feeling tone with a change of attitude about neutrality itself. What is our attitude when nothing much is happening is up in the mind and body? If you come from a traumatic past, nothing much is happening could be really welcome. If you're like many of us, what Christina Feldman calls stimulation junkies, nothing much is happening needs to be replaced. It needs to be replaced by something that's exciting, entertaining, interesting. And of course, the culture continues to condition us with wanting the next exciting sensation, song, gadget, whatever. The catalogs that come unsolicited in the mail and you open it up, you didn't even know that you wanted something. You didn't even know it existed before, and now you're craving it. So investigating some of our attitudes towards this neutral, a question might be, is it even true that nothing much is happening? There's always sense door data coming in. Again, going back to paying attention to those really subtle, mundane, ordinary kinds of sensations. We can ask ourselves, well, what really draws our interest? Can we be interested in the mundane, the common, the usual, the seemingly insignificant? For me, the way that the temperature on my skin changes in that part of my left knee when it's aching. I don't know for you all if you have any knee issues, but there's definitely a different temperature in the point of aching. Or what about the quality of the breath as the body settles and it changes from the first breaths when you first sit down? Or of course, one of a million pigeon feathers. In the same vein, we sometimes call neutral boring or dull. What's our definition of boring? Is this moment really boring? Instead of believing that if nothing stimulating is here right now, boredom must be present, what if we bring curiosity and interest to non-stimulating moments? My yoga teacher often encourages us when we're first arriving to notice what feels fine in the body. We're always taught, you know, she says, what do you want to work on? Everybody says, hips, lower back, whatever. She says, well, what's going fine right now in the body? And we can do the same kind of thing. What about those sensations in the body that aren't very strong? Just maybe a slight tightness in the neck or shoulder blade. Nothing that you would actually call unpleasant or that you needed to do anything about. Just a knowing of tightness. Or that first tinge of hunger. Not the kind of, I have to eat right now and you run into the kitchen. But just that first little tinge. What does that feel like? When we can just sit with these simple, subtle sensations, that kind of easeful place of nothing much is happening, perhaps we can feel the first little tug of wanting to go to distraction. And because we're doing that and we're kind of fine-tuning, what does that feel like? After the tug comes and it goes, oh, we better go, you know, I better start fantasizing or maybe I could start planning my weekend. We can feel what that feels like and how it's different and then come back to just nothing much is happening here. And when we notice that we're not being tugged by those big tugs of craving and aversion, what does the body feel like? What's the mind feel like in those moments? Maybe there's no argument with what is happening. And if the mind doesn't create some distraction, then what does that feel like? Sometimes when we do replace that nothing much is going on with some kind of entertainment, we notice that we have exchanged relaxation for agitation and restlessness. And certainly, neutral can be kind of dull, lost, deluded, ignorant, low energy. When that happens, just like with pleasant and unpleasant, which are pretty high energy kinds of thoughts and tugs, we can also notice if we need more energy, we sit up a little straighter, maybe we stand up, maybe we deepen our breaths. We bring enough energy so that we can actually pay attention to these small, subtle, mundane little sensations and moments. A change of attitude can be helpful with pleasant and unpleasant as well. During COVID, so many things are unpleasant. But then, I don't know if this is your experience, but I've noticed I've become pretty okay with a lot of them because I bring a different attitude towards them. Certainly mask wearing, unpleasant, but not really a problem because we know we're all connected. We're listening to Dr. Fauci and others, and we're doing it for each other. So we've taken something that's unpleasant and it's like not a problem. Not seeing family and friends is really unpleasant. And for a lot of people, especially people in my age group, they had such an aversion to Zoom. But now we're all so grateful for it. Look at us. Here we are in Sangha, you know? So finally, when we aren't paying attention to the feeling tones, we know that the mind can go towards reactivity, acting impulsively instead of thoughtfully. Perhaps causing harm to oneself or others. When we really experience and understand Vedana in all of its manifestations, we can then respond skillfully and not impulsively. And this is where Vedana is the first point in the cycle of dependent origination where you have choice. Choosing to practice with non-reactivity. And we already have a lot of those experiences. We don't always respond to pleasant by wanting more and wanting to hold on. Sometimes we're aware of the feeling and the pull, but we recognize the fleeting nature of it and we just let it be. For me, I love donuts. I love the smell of them. I love the taste of them. I love how they look. Donuts don't like me and my body. So I go to the store and I look at them and I think about them and I want them and then I leave them for the next customer. I mean, I bet you have your own examples of when you have felt that pull of pleasant and just let it be. We don't always respond to unpleasant by pushing things away. Sometimes we laugh at ourselves because once again, here I am trying to push this thing away. Sometimes the precepts of doing no harm really comes in and stops us. I just had an experience last week where I went in to get a knee brace. And the entire experience was unpleasant. The guy mumbled, he wasn't clear, he used language I didn't understand, he didn't seem to listen to what I said, he kept on bringing out these things that wouldn't work, and I could feel that unpleasant turning into wanting to say something snarky. I mean, I know how snarky feels in my body, I know how snarky sounds. And somehow the grace of Dharma came in and I went, you know, do no harm. This guy just doing his job. So I didn't follow snarky. And I just asked him how come he was wearing his brace and yada, yada. It was still an unpleasant experience. But that's all it was an unpleasant experience. We don't always follow the neutral by having to stir up something that's more interesting. Sometimes when we're in, whether it's in practice or just in daily life, and we're sitting and then we notice, wow, nothing much is going on. It's a welcome respite, non-reactivity, just this moment. Non-reactivity can be present in all the feeling tones, that place of ease and relaxation, a place where we're not in argument with what is occurring. It's the definition of equanimity. Equanimity can arise even when pleasant is really strong, when we feel pulled and tugged this way and that. But, you know, that's all that's going on. We're okay with it. Non-reactivity can happen when unpleasant is pulling us. And then we go, oh, it's unpleasant. I can be okay with it. Same with neutral, not being pulled in any direction. In each of these cases, we really know what the feeling tone is. We fully experience it. And then it's okay. Recently, Tiwari referred to feeling tones as the glue that sets in motion our future suffering. But when we, all of us, when we choose not to follow that path of impulse and reactivity, when we choose to get unglued from them, those are moments of glimpses of freedom from suffering. Remember the teachings in the Four Foundations where we're encouraged to abandon unwholesome states that have arisen, arouse wholesome states which haven't already arisen, and strengthen wholesome states that have already arisen. Well, this calm, non-reactive place, this no argument place, this moment is like this place. This is a wholesome place which can be strengthened and maintained by practicing with all of the feeling tones. So for me, practicing with neutral has really been a good doorway. Whatever works for you, use that doorway. But remember some of the essentials, that all of this experience is neutral. It's nothing much is happening until the mind sense door decides to come in and evaluate. That we want to really pay attention to the subtle, to the ordinary, that we remember all the conditioning, and that feeling tones, just like everything else, arise and pass away. And look at your attitude as about all of what is going on. In Tim's reflections last week, he asked us all, it was our homework, I guess we don't call it homework anymore, we call it reflections, to practice with moments of pleasant and unpleasant. And tonight I've suggested that you also include moments of neither. Find out for yourselves what works. And remember that this link in the cycle of dependent origination, these feeling tones, is the first place where we have some choice. So let's keep practicing with them. Thanks for your attention. It's really nice to see everybody's faces out there. So I'm going to give people a chance to say goodbye if you want to. I've encouraged you to stay because we all benefit so much, but it's also totally fine. Take care of yourselves and do what you want. And we've got a nice long chunk of time for you to be in small groups. I'm going to give you 20 minutes. And the questions are going to be basically, how have you been practicing with Vedana? Share some of your experience. And remember, when we're in small groups, we listen with an open heart. We speak with an open heart. We don't give advice. And we give everyone their time. Hi. I think I've given you all the ability to unmute. So if it would be lovely to hear anything you'd like to share from your small groups, anything at all. You might, if there's a couple people, you might want to just wiggle your fingers, and I hope you have something to share. Everybody has a real easy time with Vedana.
I'll share something, Sue.
Oh, good. Thanks, Suzanne.
It's Iris.
Oh, Iris.
I'll go after you, Iris.
Iris will start and then Suzanne. Go for it, Iris.
Okay. Is that okay, Suzanne? Yeah.
Okay. All right.
We spoke a little bit about the difference between Vedana as a feeling tone and feelings, you know, emotions. And how, because Vedana can be subtle, it's so easy to almost not notice the Vedana before we're already, as you suggested, reacting this way or that way to that very subtle Vedana. So, that was one thing that we spoke about.
Yeah, for sure, true. And the emotions that come in, all of our conditioning and attitudes and past experiences and everything. Yeah, it's definitely some subtle work. Suzanne.
I'm like, I don't know what the word was you used for the people that can't sit still. And that need to be stimulated all the time. And I definitely am in that category. And I realize I've been recovering from a back injury for like 2 weeks. So there's no severe pain right now, but there is keeping it in a certain position. And I decided on Friday, you're not moving this weekend. That means no yard work. That means no errands. That means no walks. And walks are like, during COVID, walks are some of sanity. And I had to, I chose sit and be calm for like most of the weekend. And I was surprised at once I got over that twitch of like, I should make a list then for when I'm better, when I can. Initially there was like, here's my pile of books and here's the people I'm going to call. And here's the, like, so I had tried to turn it into, you know, doing and stuff. And, but it was a point when I just was sitting and it was very neutral. And I wasn't at last week's talk, so I didn't have an assignment or I didn't have this. I wasn't practicing whatever Tim had said last Monday, because that was when I was in pain, but now I was over the pain. And it was so nice. It was so nice. And it wasn't, and it was like, oh, this is a thing. Like, this is actually a thing that's not have to watch Netflix so I'm excited and happy and stimulated by something, or have to read this book to escape something. Like, this just being here, not meditating, but just being here with, it's like I was doing the homework even though I didn't know I was supposed to be doing the homework, and just sitting. And once I got over that initial twitch, it was very, it's like, in the past, that would be a waste of time. But this weekend, I was able to choose it because it was for my body. And then once I chose it, I'm like, no, this isn't a waste of time. I was actually able to enjoy it instead of, well, I have to sit here because I can't move my back because I'm recovering from this thing. So I have to do this. So I'm going to resist it. And it was so nice. And I was like, oh, I can do this more now that I know I can do this. This thing, I'm just sitting in my yard. I am not getting up and weeding was so hard. Not sitting in your yard and not being able to touch anything is super hard. But once I said, no, this is what there is to do now, and chose it, it was just delightful. It was just like, And so that was the example that I had for that seemed most relevant to this. And I really felt like I got it. Like, I got it in those moments. So.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that experience. 'Cause you're talking about the twitch. I think we can all feel that twitch where the doing and being productive, and this is just a waste of time. And then just being with it and how it felt different in the body and mind. And that's exactly what we're talking about, practicing with it. And, you know, and I think sometimes for me, I don't even have to really label pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, but just to really know what's happening here, what's happening in the body, where's the twitch, where's that pull, you know, what happens when the pull isn't there, or when it's real steep, it's a real big pull, or when it's just a little teeny twitch. You know, all of that. So thank you, Suzanne. That's exactly, I think, what we're being invited to look at.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Anybody else? Melissa, were you just waving your arms? Nothing? Okay. Anybody else? Yeah, how is it practicing with that? Who wanted to say something?
I'll say something.
Kathy.
I found that this has not been necessarily part of my practice, but I was very intrigued that you were talking about, let's see, how did you put this? There's nothing wrong, sort of, with having nothing much going on. There might be a calm, even some equanimity there. And I, that just, that's very appealing to me. I thought, I'm usually, it's got to be something happening, you know, so it's all scheduled and exciting. And so neutral suddenly looks more interesting. I also really liked that you said, what was it about? What every moment is worthy of our attention. Something like that, I think you said. And I thought, yeah, you know, we'll see how I do. I hope I can carry this forward. Anyway,
yeah.
Thank you, Suze.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks, Kathy. Yeah, that, I mean, that we've been hearing that in Dharma talks forever, right? This moment, this is the only reality. And yet we're so busy planning our next move or what we're going to do, what books we're going to read, or going back to Suzanne's thing or whatever, that we forget where are we? What is going on? What is happening in the body and mind? You know, there's so much sense data that's coming in all the time, and we barely are aware of a fraction of it. Because, you know, I think Tim likes to use that quote from James Joyce, you know, that Mr. Duffy lived some distance from his body. We're all like Mr. Duffy, you know. The moment's here and we're somewhere else. So, yeah, it's quite the challenge. And you know, that this, I've been, as I think probably all of us have been reflecting a lot about COVID and how, just thinking about how long this may very well be going on. And in fact, a few weeks ago, and this is going to come across maybe as a real downer for some people, but I was thinking, okay, you know, I'm 76, so let's see, I lived to 96, 20 years. What if my last 20 years are with some version of this quarantine of distance and isolation? And, you know, can I find contentment, meaning in life, still connect? I mean, all the things that are important. I think this pandemic is really giving us an opportunity to ask some questions that really tie in with the practice. What happens when there isn't much happening because you're not going anywhere? You know, I don't know about you, I get pretty excited when I go to the grocery store. I didn't go for the first 2 months. My neighbors did all the shopping for me. And then finally I just like, oh, I gotta go somewhere. But you know, we're not doing anything. I mean, those of us who are still working, my office is in my home, so I don't have to, you know, I never went somewhere, but it's a great opportunity because life is giving us this chance to just, everything is kind of nothing much is happening in a way. No international travel trips, you know, no shopping sprees. I mean, we don't even go to Goodwill. I mean, you know, so anyway, anybody else want to share anything?
Well, I've taken this time to do little home projects that I've put off. I don't have a problem with restlessness. I have the opposite problem. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. My hindrances that I like are quite different. So, the sloth and torpor is my end. So, you know, but I've done things like I'm working my yard, I'm doing some projects that I've put off, and there's some other things that have come up. And it really helps me to get through the day, just to be really in the present, you know, to, if I'm digging in the dirt and I just stop and just play in the dirt instead of doing the project, it's, I really like that. So this is what the COVID has done for me, is to focus me to do stuff in the present, just to be in the present, because there's not a lot of things going on with the future part right now.
Yeah.
And I, like you though, I really enjoy going to the grocery store, and I like online shopping, so I don't really have any problem with not getting to shop. So, but I am like the person I mentioned last week. I just want to go to Marshall's and pick up things and get things I don't really like, you know?
Yeah. And you know, the hindrances are so interesting too. It's like, I've noticed certainly over these years how pleasant I find restlessness. You know, there's something happening. It's, you know, I'm on the verge of something, and it's stimulating and stuff. And so I would encourage you, Ron, also to look at, what do you get out of the sloth and torpor? Because we all get something out of our hindrances. There's a payoff.
I enjoy it. I mean, that's Sloth and Topper is one of my favorite hindrances. So.
Yeah.
You know, so there are other ones I like too, but that one is probably my top of the list.
Uh-huh.
Okay. It's sort of like being retired, you know. How do you, when you're doing nothing, how do you know when you're finished?
Yeah, good. Anyone else? We have a few more minutes before I need to give some announcements. And
so I shared in our small group, and I'll share with the larger group here. Suze, when you gave your example about beets, beets are the one and only food that I cannot imagine having a neutral feeling tone with regard, because I absolutely hate them. And I always have,
and you always will.
I think I always will, although Iris has encouraged me to work with this. I can't imagine having a neutral reaction to that flavor. Seems
interesting, isn't it?
It is. And I know all kinds of people who love beets and who tell me how wonderful they are. And, you just need to cook them the right way. And I'm like, no, you don't understand.
And then there's the other perspective that, you know, what's the big deal if you don't ever eat beets? You know?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing.
You can get everything you need from other foods.
Right. Yes.
You know, if you really like getting red coloring on your fingers, you can just, you know, cut up strawberries or do other stuff.
Right.
You know? But yeah, yes. That's interesting. So my example hit home.
It really did. And it really made me reflect on, you know, I resonate with its idea of it being on a spectrum from, you know, positive to negative with neutral in between, and believe in principle that it should be possible to maintain a neutral stance toward potentially any experience except beats.
Well, and I don't think that's
the that. I need to think about that, of what I'm saying as I say that. And I'm noticing a real resistance to this. Where I haven't had a resistance to any other idea that I've encountered in this space.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, and then the opportunity to feel, what does all that resistance feel like in the body? That it's, you know, and to take out the content of beets, but to really get familiar with that level of resistance and aversion.
Yes.
So that when it's, there's a going back to Analio's continuum, and you're in just a kind of a slight aversion, and you can then feel, what does that feel like? And maybe those are the ones that are a little easier to not get into reactivity and impulsivity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's so funny how you were there and then you moved over there. I don't know why the pictures move around like that.
I think someone joined or someone left.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you, Malia. Yeah, I imagine that others resonate with that. That there are things that are just really strong on one end of the continuum, especially the unpleasant part. So if no one has anything else, I'm just going to share some announcements. Look at the web page for all the things that are happening. We have drop-in sits 4 mornings a week, not Wednesday, and 1 afternoon. The under 40 group is meetings. In fact, it meets this Thursday. And then on Friday night, July 31st, and Saturday, August 1st, 2 people who I actually know from working with them at several years at the team mindfulness retreat, Craig and Devin I think their last name is pronounced Haas, but it may be Haase. It's H-A-S-E. They recently wrote a book that is out that's called How Not to Be a Hot Mess. And their subject for Friday night is surviving modern life. And their subject for the all-day thing on Saturday is seeing the good. And so it's Friday night and then all day Saturday. You're welcome to join us every Sunday morning. Tawari and the rest of us swap around, and we're doing we're following the same content as Tim and Tawari are for Monday night. Then the Buddhist essential classes, we've had two now, one in June on the three characteristics and one just a week ago on the Four Noble Truths. And on August 19th, Jerry Harder and I are doing an evening on the Eightfold Path. So this is 9 months of kind of all those lists that sometimes it's helpful to get kind of reacquainted with some of the content. And you don't have to, we think of them a little bit as making sense in a sequence, but they're not sequential and you can just join whenever. And then I want to remind everybody about Donna. And I know that for many people, this is a stressful time financially. So certainly take care of yourselves around that. Both Sims and the teachers will be very grateful for any Donna that you share. When you go on the Seattle Insight webpage, it's the second button from the right. And it says donate, and it's pretty straightforward. One of the other local Dharma leaders said that if you do ever want to give Donna to somebody other than Tawari, Tim, and Carrie Peterson, you have to write in a name. But other than that, it's very straightforward. And back in the old days, we used to say, does anybody need a ride? But we don't need to ask that anymore. So thank you all so much for being here and being part of our Sangha. Take care, be well, be safe. Look forward to seeing you all again. Bye-bye.